You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, CPA, CFP, and AEP, on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen each and every week at wdiy.org. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is April 3rd, 2013. The markets were down just a bit today, the Dow closing at 14,550, the NASDAQ at 3218, and the S&P at 1553. I'm happy to have you all here. If you're driving in your car, it's a beautiful night. But remember, if you haven't finished your tax return yet, you might have some questions yet to ask. We are here tonight to answer questions if you need them. We're going to talk about some other things as well. But if you have questions about your tax return, we'd love to have your calls tonight. Makes the show a lot more exciting, and you got to get those tax returns done. I don't want to hear about the date, though, because I've got a lot more tax returns to get finished. But anyway, the phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. I'm trying to get that information out to you quick. If you are in the car on your way home, you need to go tune in when you get into the house so you can pull out your information and figure out what questions you have and give us a call at 610-758-8810. Last week, Rod Young filled in for me, which was very nice to give me a little break, and he talked about various situations that could arise, like corrected tax documents, having to do amended returns, what do you do? So Rod covered that. It was a nice break for me. Tonight, I have a repeat guest with me in the studio, and we are going to discuss your tax return and what you can do with it and what you can learn from it. So if you are one of those people who have lots of energy and already finished your tax return. Now we're going to talk to you about what you can do with that tax return. What kind of information does it tell you? What you can learn from it? How long do you have to keep it? When do you have to shred it? All that kind of information. We are live. We welcome your questions. You can call in and talk live with us. Ray is in the studio with us this evening, and he will take your questions. And he will ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you don't want to talk live on air, you just give your question to Ray and he will bring it in. We do discuss general financial planning topics, not specific investments. And the same applies to your tax questions as well. And while we do typically have a topic each week, we can still take questions off topic. Tonight, we are discussing, again, various things you can do with your tax return. And most people simply file their tax return away in a drawer and they forget about it until after April 15th. So we're going to talk about things you can learn by looking at those numbers. And helping me in the studio this evening is Sherry Free, a CPA. Sherry is a principal with Hutchinson, Gillihan, and Free, a public accounting firm in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. She's a member of the AICPA, the PICPA. And she serves on the governing council for both the AICPA and the PICPA and is immediate past president of the PICPA. Let's talk about what the PICPA is for a minute. It's the Pennsylvania Institute of Certified Public Accountants. And it's through their good efforts that we are having this show this evening with Sherry's help as a representative from there to bring tax awareness to our listening audience. You serve on many other organizations, Sherry, so let me just welcome you back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I thank her for being here. No one understands but us. the sacrifice this woman is making to be here this evening at April 3rd. So I so appreciate you for being here.
It just means I have to work till 11 o'clock tonight after I leave here.
I know. It's exhausting. But I thank her for being here because Sherry was on with us once before, and we had a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed having her. And she is just a wealth of knowledge and very active in a lot of organizations to kind of help, you know, individual taxpayers with tax legislation. You're very involved in that.
Yes.
So do you want to add a little bit to your little brief bio that I gave? Anything for our audience?
I think you pretty much summed it up. I'm a very busy person, but it's a passion of mine. I mean, I do a lot of work with PICPA, a lot with AICPA, and it's just really nice working with a lot of CPAs and getting around the state and speaking with people and helping a lot of nonprofit organizations as well as taxpayers.
So Sherry works very, very hard during tax season to gather all this knowledge, and then she also goes and is an advocate for taxpayers and tax preparers alike, I imagine.
I am, yes.
Well, we thank
helping
you.
Out in Harrisburg.
We thank you very much for that. So we are going to, as I mentioned, talk about things you can do with your tax return. And I did want to mention that the representative from the Pennsylvania Institute of Certified Public Accountants, the PICPA, Kathleen Miller, has just been so gracious in bringing ideas to me. And it's a very welcome. And I want to just put a shout out to her and thank her for that. She is an advocate for the PICPA as well and getting out good messages to taxpayers alike, just like you, Sherry. So I appreciate bringing financial awareness to our listeners. So our topic, once we get started here, folks, you can still call in with questions. We take those anytime. We just fill in with topics in between the calls. So the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we actually had a question come in already from Ted. Ted called in, and he's off air, and he said he has rental property and does repairs himself, labor. Can he get or take a tax deduction for his labor? If so, how would he calculate that? Sherry, do you want to take that question? We get this often,
yes,
don't we?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Actually, you don't want to take a deduction for your labor because if you deduct it, then you have to declare it as self-employment income, which would be subject to Social Security. You're better off just not taking the deduction for your labor.
Okay, Ted, so I hope you understood that. You know, one of the things that I believe is a motivator for people to buy rental property is a lot of times they put like their sweat equity into the property. They might go in and do repairs or improvements, etc., and it could end up increasing the value of the property. So Ted, as Sherry had said, while you're doing all that work and you know that your time is worth something, you don't pay yourself to do that. You're not putting money out, so you wouldn't report that as a deduction because you haven't written a check to yourself. And if you did, Sherry said, it would be self-employment income. What you have to recognize, though, is that by you doing the work, you're saving the cost of paying somebody else, which does save you money in the end. Because let's pretend you paid someone $1,000 and you would save, let's say you're in a 25% tax bracket, you save $250 in taxes, but you paid them $1,000. So net, you're out of pocket $750. The reason I'm giving you that example, Ted, is I still want to encourage you to do the work because in the end, you're still ahead because you're not paying someone else to do it. You're ahead because you're not having to declare that income, but you're also putting sweat equity into the property, which could increase the value. And eventually when you go to sell it, you could get a return on that, and then any gain on the property that you have would end up being capital gains.
Which is a much better tax treatment.
Right, because we have better tax rates. So Ted, thank you so much for calling. Folks, if you have questions this evening, you can give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I thank Ted for getting the ball rolling. Again, the number is 610-758-8810. I have in the studio with me this evening Sherry Free from Hutchinson, Gillihan, and Free, a public accounting firm in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. And she is a member of the American and Pennsylvania Institutes of Certified Public Accountants and very involved in advocating for taxpayers and tax preparers. We're coming up on our next break, Sherry. So I think before we get into using our tax return for ways to help us in our financial decisions, I think we'll take our next break. And then when we come back, we'll start our conversation. So again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. Is your car so environmentally incorrect that it creates its own ecosystem?
Donate it through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
This station gets the proceeds and you get a tax break.
To find out more, call 866-789-8627.
Car Talk airs Friday night at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. For more information, visit our website at wdiy.org.
And welcome back to the show. I have with me this evening Sherry Free, a CPA from the accounting firm of Hutchinson, Gillihan, and Free, a public accounting firm in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. I thank her for being here. We had another call come in. If you do have questions, you can call in and talk live on air with us or give your question to Ray, and he will bring it into the studio. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and we had Paul from Bethlehem call. And Sherry, he said, just received a 1099. He didn't say what kind of 1099, but he received a 1099, and he had already filed his personal return. What should he do? And then he asks further, isn't there a January 31st deadline for 1099s? Oh, Paul, we wish. Yeah. We wish there was a deadline.
Technically, they're supposed to have them out to the recipients by January 31st, although they're not due to the government until the end of February. We've been finding that a lot of 1099s have been coming in late this year, especially with the law changes and everything. What he's going to have to do probably is amend his return. And if he does that before April 15th, there wouldn't be any penalty for late payment on the taxes that he would owe.
Okay. Now, Paul, one thing you didn't describe to us is what kind of 1099 it was. It could be a 1099 miscellaneous for unearned or for compensation. No. Could be contract work. And then if you, let's pretend someone paid you $5,000 for contract work, then you might have regular income tax, but you might also have self-employment tax. So Sherry's point about amending the return and getting that additional tax paid would be more important when you're talking about bigger dollar amounts. Sometimes I see that people get 1099s or corrected 1099s that might not have a huge change.
Yeah, I actually have some clients that get corrected 1099s all the way up through the beginning of April. And in that case, we take a look if it's interest or dividends. If it's just a small change and it's not really going to affect the tax significantly, we generally ignore it at that point.
Right, it would be immaterial.
Right.
And sometimes the IRS ignores those
yes.
corrections too. I mean, clients don't even get a notice.
Yeah, IRS isn't going to send you a notice if you only owe them an extra $2 or something.
Right, so that is something you might want to look at as well, Paul, to look at the dollar amount on the 1099 and the nature of the 1099. If it's dividends, interest, if it's an interest dividend for $10, it might not change your return at all. So you want to look at that before you get too worried about it. And sometimes, too, the IRS will send a notice if it was a little bit more than that, a little bit more material, and you didn't file an amended return. They might send you a notice and say, hey, we're changing your return for, you know, $100, you owe an extra $15 or something. Some people wait to get that notice, too.
They do their matching program. It usually takes them about 2 years to do their matching program.
Yeah.
So they probably wouldn't notice this until, 2015, and at that point they may charge you interest on it for 2 years.
Yeah, interest and penalties.
Yes.
But if you amend the return, if it's material, and you amend the return first, they may not charge any penalties.
Yes, especially if you amend it before April 15th, you shouldn't have any penalties.
Okay, Paul, so thank you for calling. We appreciate it. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Great questions, great calls. I thank you for calling in. Keep them coming. Keep Ray busy. I'm happy he's here to help us, and Sherry as well. Gets our brains going because we're kind of exhausted. Sherry, Kathleen Miller at the PICPA had suggested we do a little bit of discussion about tax returns and looking at the tax returns so that people don't put them away, you know, just yet. You take your return, you file it away, and you don't look at it again. But how can looking at this year's tax return help us lower tax bills on next year's tax return?
Well, it can help you if you take a look at what your income is, where your income is coming from, what type of deductions you might have, so you can plan for them. One of the biggest things that I get, you know, people come in and they say they may have donated something to Goodwill, but they never got a receipt. Well, guess what? It teaches you to get a receipt for the future.
That's a very good point. That's one of the best points. Okay,
and
go
it
ahead.
Also. It helps you. You want to take a look at your withholding. Probably the biggest thing that I learn, or my clients learn from tax returns, is whether their withholding is set properly if they're an employee. I've had a lot of cases where people have, they're suffering from the empty nest syndrome. Their kids have moved out. They suddenly realize, oh my gosh, I don't have the deductions that I had before, and now I owe tax when I always used to get a refund. So you want to take a look at what the results of your tax return were this year and whether you want to adjust your withholding to compensate for any changes that are occurring.
That's a good point as well. So I want to comment on your
yes.
points because I get excited about this because, you know, we experience these things with the receipt. Years ago, folks would say, oh, I gave so much to the Goodwill, I gave so much to the church, and they may not have had receipts, or they said they had them at home. And a few years ago, the IRS came down, and I don't remember which act it was, Pension Protection Act, it might have been, 2006,
yeah.
I don't remember, where they started saying you have to have the receipts.
Yes.
And so if you have donations of more than $250, the charity actually has to acknowledge it with a letter and say no goods were received.
Correct.
And then smaller amounts, a canceled check or credit
yes.
card bill
yes.
will suffice. But one of the big things is the Goodwill, and I'll have people who say, well, just whatever the normal deduction is.
Yeah. I have to point out to people that as a tax preparer, we're not allowed to make up your numbers for you.
So, you know, if you have a valid deduction, let's make sure we have the receipts
right.
for it. You
right.
know, I have people who told me they put information in, or excuse me, put their charitable donation like in a bin, like probably in a gas station parking lot or something. And I say, well, then you didn't get a receipt. We cannot take it. So when you mentioned, Sherry, to make sure you had a receipt, go to the places that are going to give you the receipt and, you know, document what you've given and do the valuation. And I know that I think it's the Salvation Army on their website has a great valuation
for that. Yeah, because you need to use the thrift store value for clothing and household items. You can't use what you paid for them.
and many people think that they can take half of what you paid for it. So they have a suit
yeah.
for $100 and they think they could it'd be 50, and I say, listen, would you actually have paid $50 at a thrift store for that suit?
Right.
No. Maybe $10, $15. So Salvation Army has like a little guideline for that. One other comment you had mentioned about the withholdings, I just had a case where we did tax planning based on the numbers today and what the tax return looked like. And so Sherry, I told the client, okay, you don't need to make estimated tax payments because you have withholdings, and they had a regular pension, so $2,000 of withholdings on their pension, good, the $2,000 will cover your tax due. Well, somewhere along the line, the taxpayer went and changed their withholdings with their former employer.
Oh, okay.
And now they had like close to nil
yeah.
of withholdings. So then they said to me, Lori, you told me I didn't have to make estimated tax payments.
I get the same thing sometimes. And people, in order to avoid a penalty, you have to pay in either the equivalent of the prior year tax or 90% of the current year tax. And a lot of times we rely on that prior year tax based on them earning the same amount of money. And if somebody goes on unemployment, they may not have the same withholding as they had the prior year, and then they end up having a penalty at the end of the year. We always tell people, if you have a life-changing experience, give us a call. It's good to plan ahead.
Right. Or if you're going to change your withholdings without telling us, but we've planned for that, you've got to make sure that you know what we know what you have going. A call did come in from Dan in Fogelsville, and it's off air. So, Dan, I want you to hang on because we're coming up to a break, and I don't want to have to interrupt the answer to your question. So when we come back from our break, we will take that. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. I love that Ray is here taking the questions. I love that Jeff's here every week, too, and that Sherry's here. So we've got lots of hands helping in the studio tonight. If you have questions, it's a great night to call. 610-758-8810. And when we come back, we'll answer Dan's question.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, welcome back to the show. I have with me in the studio this evening Sherry Free, a CPA and representative from the PICPA. And she is a principal at Hutchinson, Gillihan & Free, a public accounting firm in Quakertown. And we are here answering questions. We have Dan, I'm going to come back to your question in just a minute. I have someone on line one, so I'd like to go ahead and take their question. Al, can you hear me? Al, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. How can we help you?
Yeah, I wanted to, two questions here. I had filed some Pennsylvania amended returns and received for more than one tax year, and I did this last year.
Okay.
So in the for the current year, I received notices that I was receiving a refund.
Yeah.
The question is, it seems like I have those refunds have increased my current year taxes quite a bit, because even though it's for multiple years of refunds, do I go back and amend a prior year federal return to match the refund to the year that it's from, or do I have to carry them all in the current year?
No, Al, and the refunds that you received may or may not be taxable. Sherry, do you want to answer that?
Yeah, actually, the only way that they would be taxable is if you had gotten a tax benefit in a prior year by deducting the taxes that you paid in. So if you itemized your deductions, generally that's when you would have to declare the refunds as income. If you did not itemize your deductions and deduct those taxes through that method in prior years, if you were using a standard deduction, then you would not declare the refund as income.
Itemized.
Does that sound familiar, Al? Do you normally itemize deductions?
Yes.
You do.
So those taxes are all deducted.
Okay. Well, it actually could be a little trickier than that, but if you got a benefit from the deduction by itemizing, and sometimes you have to look to see how much of a benefit you actually got.
Yeah, there's actually a worksheet, I think, that the IRS provides to determine how much of it is or is not taxable.
So you would report the refunds on the current year if they end up being includable based on you getting a benefit in those prior years. So if you got a refund from 2010, 2011, then you'd go back to your 2010 return, your 2011 return, and do those worksheets to see if you did get a benefit. All right, so that's one thing. So let's assume they're taxable. You report it in the year you receive it because you're a cash basis taxpayer. You don't go back and amend the prior returns.
Okay.
Now, you had a second question as well?
Second question is, my child is now an adult and receives SSI. She received an insurance settlement, and I've never filed a return for her. Yeah, she's never had any income.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's had an insurance settlement from an accident. It's just at the threshold of what you can earn, without triggering reductions in SSI. Question is, do I need to file a return for her yet?
Generally, insurance proceeds in relation to an accident or a personal injury are not taxable income. So I would say it probably would not affect your need to file a return. SSI, it's like Social Security. It can be taxable if you have enough other taxable income. But if that's her only income, I would, off the top of my head, say it sounds like it you probably don't need to file a return.
Did someone tell you it was taxable?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm just sort of curious. I've never filed a return. Is there ever a point that she needs to have a return? So she has no other source of income.
Yeah. So, as Sherry said, you might want to refer to, you know, if there was a lawyer that helped you with the case. Typically, I try to get attorneys to communicate to clients if there would be any portion at all that would be includable in income. Typically, that's only around awards that have to do with replacing wages and things like that. As Sherry said, if this was some type of personal injury, then chances are it might not be. So you not be includable at all. So you might want to check with the attorney.
Yeah, occasionally you might want to also check, because sometimes when insurance settlements come out, if they've held it because they're waiting for legalities to go through, it could earn some interest. And I found that in cases that the interest income that was earned may be taxable, but that's usually a pretty small portion.
None of that's the case here.
Okay, Al, so I hope we helped you out tonight.
Yes, you have. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you for calling. Have a great night. Okay, folks, if you have questions, you can give us a call, 610-758-8810. Dan, I hope you're still listening. Dan had asked, if someone has a right of tenancy in a home, which means they have a life interest, a right to live there, and if energy credits are available, and if the tenant paid for the improvements, can the tenant take the tax credits? Now, this is a little bit of a different situation, and I don't know if Sherry or I have ever even seen this, and it might be a little unclear about this right of tenancy. Sometimes there's something where someone may have transferred their home to their children, and they might retain the right to live there. That's called a life estate, and you could argue that there's some ownership interest in that. But as far as the energy credits, first of all, a lot of the energy credits expired. Some of the ones that are still available are very minimal.
Yeah, they're usually for larger things like solar or geothermal. Those are the credits that still exist. If you're talking about insulation and windows and doors, that expired at the end of last year. I honestly don't know. I mean, rights of tenancy is probably a legal term. Since I'm not a lawyer, I'm not sure.
Right. So, Dan, I'm guessing from what you're saying here, you might have a life estate, a right to live in the home. So there may be some element of ownership there. I would probably first try to figure out if whatever it was that you feel would qualify for an energy credit, I would first try to see if it actually qualifies. A lot of times people will, I think there are still some coverage for some windows and things like that. I thought there was still some little provisions for certain property. Maybe it's the air circulating things and some of the energy credits
are
still there.
But they're a little more obscure. It's not as broad as it used to be.
It's not. And I've had clients who think they qualify for it and then they find out they don't. So there is a website called energystar.gov. energystar.gov. You can go on that website and you can look for the link for 2012 energy credits. Or it says tax credits, and there's lots of information there about the energy credits that still exist. If you had taken any in the past, there's a lifetime cap, too, and that's where a lot of people are getting bounced out of getting any of these additional credits. I think I had someone who got a $50 credit, so they're just not what they were used to, unless, of course, they're as Sherry had mentioned, the geothermal. Those are ongoing through 2016, and they're big dollars. So first, see if you're going to even qualify for it. My concern here would be if the real homeowner had already taken energy credits on it. What I wouldn't know is if you can take energy credits on the same property. because of that lifetime cap. So I wish I had more information for
you.
This is
where consulting a CPA comes in handy, right?
Yeah, then we'd have to sit and research it. So, and Dan, it might not be worth the research if it's going to save you $50. So that's why you need to kind of do some of the legwork first to see if whatever improvement it was that you did even qualifies. And a great starting point for that is on the website energystar.gov. And then I would then consult, if you find out it does, I would then consult with the homeowner to see if they had done any energy credits already. I might think that if you couldn't do it on the same property. Okay, so I hope that helps. Folks, if you have questions this evening, and I love the questions, I love the calls, keep them coming, keeps Ray busy, makes it fun for him. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We will be back in just a few seconds.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY-FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
And we are back with Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me this evening, Sherry Free, a CPA from Hutchinson, Gillihand, and Free, a public accounting firm in Quakertown. Give her a round of applause. Yay for coming all the way from Quakertown at tax time. It's certainly a sacrifice of...
I don't see the outside of my office a whole lot at this time of year.
Oh, so this was selfish of you to come.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it's a pretty day.
That's what my husband said to me. He goes, just go to the show. Don't think about work. You can't do tax returns while you're there. But what's really sick is that we love answering these questions,
yes,
don't we?
Yes, we do.
Makes it more fun for us. So if you have questions this evening, you can call in at 610-758-8810, and you could talk live on air with us, which was a lot of fun with Al just now. It's nice to be able to go back and forth. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Ray and he'll bring it into the studio for us. So Sherry is here and we're talking about ways you can use your tax return to kind of help you with some of your financial decisions. One was looking at your tax return to lower your tax bill for next year. And a couple things we had mentioned is if you have charitable contributions, make sure you're getting receipts for them, even like for organizations that take in-kind donations, as well as make sure you're aware of your withholdings. And if you work with a tax preparer and they're basing their tax estimates for the next year on your withholdings or quarterly payments, you want to make sure you're doing those quarterly payments or you have the conversation with your CPA if you decide not to make them, because we have people who do that too,
yes.
Sherry?
Yes, we do.
So we always have to say, did you actually make the payments that we told you to do? So just be aware of all of those things. Another thing that had come up that I had noticed this year, Sherry, is there was a little input on the software that talked about if you were an identity theft victim, there was like a PIN number that the IRS might have given you. And I know that what I remembered hearing, I think, was that that was one of the reasons the refunds were being slowed down a little bit. In the past, we could get refunds sometimes within a week deposited into our bank accounts. And I know this year the IRS said it's going to take a little longer. And I thought one of the reasons was because there was some incidents of identity theft.
We actually did have a couple of clients that suffered from that last year.
I had one
people
too.
In Florida. It was really rampant in Florida, and where we would go to e-file the return and find out a return had already been filed, and then they had to establish their identity, get a PIN number from the IRS in order to file their return.
So did the IRS respond, or do we know what was happening or why that happened?
Actually, I think there was a news story on it the other night on network TV about the identity theft problem. And they are just, it's a nightmare for some people having to establish their identity with the IRS. And I think you are correct that they are slowing down the refunds a little bit. Although from what I've heard, my clients have been getting their refunds within about 2 weeks if they're doing the direct deposit.
But 2 weeks is longer than what we were seeing last year.
It is, yeah. We were seeing them a week to 10 days, and now it's up to about 2 weeks. But on the IRS website, they're boasting that they're doing it within 21 days.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's still not bad. When you consider years ago when we used to get checks,
six
it would
weeks.
Be a lot
six
longer.
Weeks later. So they must be implementing some strategies to try to prevent some of that fraud that they had been seeing.
I think they're doing more of a matching to look at some of the factors that people had in their returns previously, that the numbers make sense, that they're not just arbitrarily coming up with numbers, that type of thing.
Good.
You know, if somebody gets a hold of your Social Security number, they're not necessarily going to know what you've reported on a previous tax return. So the numbers they report might not make sense. And I think the IRS is doing some cross checks on that.
Yeah, thank goodness. I know that we had it with a client whose wife had passed away, and they had done it with the wife's ID number somehow. So I think that criminals out there actually scope the newspapers for deaths, because I also had that same client and another client who had lost their husband had phone calls, phone scams as well.
Oh, wow.
Where people were calling them on the phone saying, I'm the grandson and I'm with the police and they need to take money. And they have it where the child is like crying and in, you know, where incoherent, where you can't really tell who it is who's calling.
Gosh.
So it's amazing what, you know, criminals can come up with very smart strategies. So we need to be aware of identity theft and how that can affect your refund then, is it would probably prevent you from being able to electronically file
your return. You cannot electronically file. And a lot of times what you have to do is establish your identity by going to an IRS office with proof of like a birth certificate, a passport, something like that, to prove who you are. And then you will have to file on paper. And it will take much longer to get your refund then.
Right. And then they usually recommend as well that you contact like the various credit bureaus and let them know as well in case someone's trying to use that same information to go out and get credit. Do you have any tips for us on how to keep your identity safe?
Well, probably the biggest thing is don't just throw stuff out. you know, we were talking at one point about what records do you keep. You had mentioned that. And when you do dispose of records, take advantage of the shredding events that different places have. I know on the PICPA website, they usually post some of the shredding events. I think some of the local recycling centers will do shredding for you. You just want to make sure that you're not just throwing out documents that might have crucial financial data on it.
Okay, so let's talk for a minute then about how long we keep some of that crucial financial data. And we might have different answers, and there might be, you know, official rules by the IRS, but then we have our own rules as tax preparers.
If it were up to me, I'd keep it forever.
But it's funny how often this question comes up.
It does.
Right?
I get asked a lot about that. And I mean, our general guideline, I'm not sure what yours is, but we usually do 5 to 7 years on tax return information, anything that you've claimed a deduction for. You want to have that backup because the IRS technically is allowed to audit 3 years from the date a return is filed. So, you know, 5 years, I'm a very conservative person, so I tend to like it a little bit longer. But that pertains to anything that you're deducting. But you don't want to forget that you do want to keep records for anything that you still own, assets that you own, investments that you own. You don't want to get rid of that information as long as you still own that asset, because that helps you determine basis. So, and one of the biggest things that I've had lately is investments in your 401k, because some of those are coming out of your tax dollars. I've had a lot of instances where the state of Pennsylvania, if you take a premature distribution, they're trying to tax the whole thing, even though you may have contributed a large portion. And if you can't establish that basis, they're saying, sorry, it's taxable.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I want to reiterate a few things that you just said. Folks, if you have questions this evening, give us a call. We love the questions. Phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. About the keeping records. And then I like to tell people to keep their tax returns forever. Yes, I always think there's valuable information there. But can I tell you, Sherry, as clients get older and they're really trying to start to downsize and cleanse out their home and move into like assisted living, I'm a little bit more liberal with them. I'll say, okay, 6 years, what might be okay? So I let them start getting rid of some of those older returns. But the reason it is so critical, I've had two cases just probably this week where we needed cost basis, and people don't even realize they don't have cost basis with their broker.
Yeah.
Because brokers now have to track cost basis on recent purchases, and they may have it if you bought it with them, you know, several years ago. But sometimes when you buy things, it goes way, way back, or it goes back to a different broker that changed into a new broker, and they may not have that information. But I had a gentleman who came in with, he knew he had bought something called Southern Resources in like 1980 something, I think. And it evolved into many different companies, eventually into El Paso. And then El Paso was just acquired or merged with Kinder Morgan, took El Paso in as a subsidiary. So I said, we need cost basis. There was a cash transaction that he had no control over. He got, you know, it was a mixed transaction. He got new shares and he got some cash. And I said to him, we need to know how much you paid for this El Paso. He said, well, when I bought it, it wasn't El Paso. But you know what? He went in his records. He found that he had bought it. We have, you know, amazing software these days you can buy to calculate cost basis. And we put into the software the original shares and the original company name. And he had told us he never took any money out of it. He always reinvested the dividends. Now, sometimes people tell you that and you really don't know if it's true or not. But it actually calculated the number of shares and the cost basis with the reinvested dividends. And it came to almost the exact amount of shares that he had today.
Wow.
So that kind of information is very, very valuable. And that you wouldn't have if
you shredded. Well, and one of the other things is a lot of times the investment company knows what was paid for it, but they may not know that there was a life-changing event. If it was held in joint names and one of the spouses passes away, you can get the step-up in basis for half of it. So the broker may not know that and may report a different basis than what is your actual tax basis in that asset.
That's a great point, too. So some of those records you have, folks, can be very, very important. I had another client who had purchased shares through an employee stock purchase plan, and they had those records back from 1987. So that was really good, and they were so excited that they had those records. So
your clients are much better than mine.
Well, those are my, you know, favorite cases. So lots of good information. So a little bit of varying information on how long we might want to keep returns. I think it's a good point to mention that the IRS can go back, you know, 6 years if they choose to. There might be other things that people could get rid of that they really don't need for their tax returns, but people sometimes think they do. I see people come in with utility bills and maybe old statements, monthly statements. And so I try to let folks know if you have a statement that has year-end values, or you know you have all your cost basis for all of your positions and investments that you have, then maybe you can think about getting rid of some of those old statements.
The biggest thing I see is people have piles of, especially elderly people, have piles of medical bills, and they weren't able to itemize their deductions for medical costs because of their income. There are income limitations. There's really no need to keep those because you didn't even claim a deduction for them.
That's a great point, because those are the ones that pile up the most.
Yes.
People will have their 3 inches of CVS receipts from the pharmacy. That's a very good point. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're taking your tax questions and also talking about important information around your tax return. What can you learn from your tax return? How can you save income taxes looking at this year's return? And also, how long do you have to keep your tax return? Should you shred it, or should you shred the backup documents? So if you have questions, you can give us a call at 610-758-8810. One other item I wanted to mention about using this year's return to save on taxes next year is when we look at our tax return, there's different kinds of income on our return that gets taxed differently. So what do we mean by that? We talk about ordinary income and capital gain income, but there's also qualified dividends. Do you want to just take a minute to talk about looking at our tax return this year to see if there's, you had, I think you kind of had said something earlier about looking at the income on your return. Let's talk about what changes we might be able to make to save taxes next year by looking at our investment income.
Well, like you mentioned, there's differing tax rates. Qualified dividends have a preferential tax treatment, just like capital gains may have a preferential tax treatment. So, there are also tax-free investments that you can get into. A lot of it depends. I mean, obviously, you're probably going to want to talk to a financial planner about it. I do get clients that, you know, maybe have a couple hundred dollars of interest income, and then they say, well, should I be in tax freeze? It's like, really, probably not something you want to worry about. But if you have significant investment income, there are definitely ways to structure your investments so that you're paying the least amount of tax, so that you have the qualified dividends, you have capital gains, you have tax-free investments.
We have some clients who have all qualified dividends, and if, to the extent they're in a 15% tax bracket with those, they're paying zero tax.
Yeah.
So that's something to pay attention to. I need to take a break, so I hope that Bruce stays on the line for just a few seconds. And Bruce, when we come back, we're going to take your call. We'll be back in just a second.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Folks, you are listening to WDIY, where definitely it's you, your source for local news and public affairs, NPR and music diversity. The time now is 6:45 p.m. Now back to our program.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me Sherry Free, a CPA from Hutchinson, Gillihan, and Free in Quakertown, Pennsylvania. Thank her for coming all that way to come visit with us. We have Bruce on line one. Can we grab Bruce right now? Bruce, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. How can we help you?
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I get a pension, and I received a 1099-R, and I have in box one it says gross distribution for the amount of the monthly pension for the year that I received it for 2012,
yeah.
And the box 2A says taxable amount zero.
Yeah.
However, box 2B says taxable amount not determined with an X in a box.
Right.
And do I pay taxes on this amount?
Oh, yeah.
The full amount, right?
Yeah, I would imagine.
Nine times out of ten, yes. There are occasional, some cases where you might not, where you have to calculate the portion that could be taxable if you have basis in that pension. If you had contributed after-tax dollars to purchase part of that pension, then part of it might not be taxable because it's a return of your after-tax dollars. But probably 99% of the time, yes, you're going to pay tax on that full amount.
Bruce, we see these quite often with Bethlehem Steel retirees who have monies coming from the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation,
yes.
And they all have been coming through with zero taxable amount, and I think that's just because, you know, they couldn't make a determination on that, but basically it's all taxable. Quite often you might see where a portion might not be if someone was like a government worker and like maybe, I don't know, back maybe pre-1986 contributions.
Yeah, well, and usually what they'll have on the 1099-R is there's a box, and I'm not sure the number. It'll say employee's basis. And
yeah, no, I didn't contribute at all to this.
Okay, if you didn't, then yes, sorry.
Yeah,
sorry
so
to inform you, it's going to be taxable.
For federal purposes, but not for Pennsylvania purposes.
And so, the only reason I'm questioning it, I've been paying full amount taxes on this for 9 years now, and I just started looking at it because another fellow retiree asked me about it. And I said, I've been paying a full amount, I don't know. And so I thought I'd call you.
Oh, great question. Thank
yes.
you for calling.
Thank you for answering
okay.
my question.
Okay, have a great night.
You too.
Thanks, bye. If you have questions, you can give us a call at 610-758-8810. Don't I have such nice listeners?
Yes, you do.
I have such nice listeners. I thank them
great
for being here.
Great questions, too.
Yes, nice people at WDIY. We are talking about taxes. We're talking about different ways to use your tax return. Sherry, I want to talk a little bit about refunds, and then I want to talk a little bit about the PICPA's website and resources that are available to the public. If people do have questions, we still have time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. I don't have any more breaks, so you're welcome to give us a call. Plenty of time to fit that in. Another way to use tax returns, looking at your refund, what should people do with that refund? Do we have some ideas for them?
Well, I generally tell people you don't want to, some people like to have a huge refund. You're basically giving the government your money tax-free to use for the whole year if you have a big refund. So when I see a very large refund on a return, a lot of times I will tell people, you might want to consider adjusting your withholding so that you're not giving as much money to the government ahead of time. But you can also use parts of your refund to contribute to an IRA that can even reduce your taxes even more, potentially. There's certain qualifications you have to meet. But, I generally take a look at that, a refund as a tax preparer and decide, they need to adjust their withholding. This is a little excessive.
And sometimes it's excessive, and sometimes people might, when you see like $11,000 refund,
yes,
or something like that, other people might have like a $3,000 refund, and then you'll ask that question, and they'll say, well, that's my vacation money, or that's what I used to pay my real estate taxes.
And that's fine. In today's interest rate environment, I mean, it's not that bad, a few thousand dollars. But, yeah, those very large refunds, it's like, do you really, if you had $10,000, wouldn't you want to put it someplace earning you a little bit of money?
One thing that has come up that sometimes we have retirees who maybe have a small pension and maybe Social Security and really not much else, and they have had withholdings on those pensions, but their tax is zero year after year. What can they do to change that?
Well, you can always change the withholding on your pension or change the percentage withholding on your pension. A lot of it comes down to your individual client. Do they want a refund?
Right.
I find that especially with elderly clients, they're so nervous about potentially owing money. It's almost like a peace of mind thing, knowing that it's there and they're not going to have to write a check. So if it gives them any peace, fine,
and
leave it
funny,
in.
And it's funny, some people like saying they're getting a refund too, because I have tried to talk people into reducing their withholdings, and they still like those refunds. Again, especially for people who have zero tax, if in the past you were owing and you had a pension that had withholdings on it and you really don't need that anymore, just like when you were employed and you filled out a W-4 when you first got your job, or you needed to change your withholdings when you got married, when you're employed, you fill out a W-4. When you have a pension, you fill out a W-4P. P as in Paul, P for pension, and you can submit it to your employer. Where you were employed, if it's a retirement plan, it may be to the trustee of the retirement plan. So W-4P, and you can say, withhold zero. So try to keep that in mind, and you can learn these things from looking at your tax returns. So ways to use your tax refund, as Sherry had mentioned, you might fund an IRA with that. In fact, I have clients who do that. And an important point to note here is you can actually file for your refund. Say you're taking an IRA contribution, an IRA deduction on your tax return if you qualify. And let's say it gives you a $4,000 refund. And let's say you were going to put $4,000 or $5,000 into an IRA. It wouldn't get you that big of a refund. There's other reasons you have that big refund. But let's say you're going to have a $4,000 refund. You can actually file for your refund and get that first as long as you fund your IRA by April 15th.
Might be a little late now, but
earlier
it
would be
late season.
Too late now, but earlier. But that's something we can learn by looking at our tax return now to be smarter next year to do it. So you can.
And one of the benefits of filing early, too.
Yeah. Now, people who have 401ks or self-employed retirement accounts, I shouldn't say anybody who has a 401k, self-employed people who have retirement accounts, self-employed retirement accounts, we actually have to make sure you fund those accounts before we file your return. So that's a little bit of a different rule, so something to keep in mind. Sherry, what kind of resources does the PICPA have for our listeners?
Wanted to mention, the PICPA website is a wealth of information, not just for CPAs, but for taxpayers also. If you go to our website at www.picpa.org, there there is a resources tab, and under that is a consumer section where you can find, you can ask a CPA a question, you can submit questions for a CPA to answer, you can find a CPA, you can request a CPA speaker. There's also videos and podcasts of financial advice, articles, and some tax help tools. So there's really a wealth of information for taxpayers to use there. And it's at their fingertips.
So that's good information, PICPA.org for taxpayer resources. And I can't imagine being able to ask a tax preparer questions now. I wonder how.
Actually, there's a lot of questions already posted there. You'd be amazed. A lot of times the questions that people ask, if you go to those frequently asked questions sections, you will find your question. Even if you go to the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue website, they have a frequently asked questions section. Also the IRS website. A lot of times, if you've got the question, somebody's already had it, and you may find your answer there.
That's a very good point to make as well, because, and I imagine you might as well, Sherry, I go to those websites, to those frequently
yes.
asked questions to help me answer questions yes. sometimes for taxpayers, because it's amazing the variety of situations that can come up that you need to research or that are one-offs that we can't always find in the research. And so we get lots of
And probably the biggest question I get is, where's my refund? And I always tell them, if you go to the irs.gov website, there's a little button. You can click there that says, where's my refund? And if you put in the information, it will tell you whether your refund has been sent or not.
Very good. And I believe that Pennsylvania has some capability of letting people know if they've made their estimated tax payments
yes.
as well?
I use they have a phone number that you can call. It's an 888 number. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but I know we can go in and you can check on estimated payments that have been made to make sure you're claiming the proper estimated payments on your tax return.
I keep forgetting about that. So I'm trying to reach clients saying, did you make your payments? And I forgot. So we can do that for Pennsylvania, but the federal, we just can find where our refund is. We don't know
Correct.
If they've made their estimated
right.
tax payments. And I imagine that you also have to have additional information pertaining to your return, like what
yes.
the refund
Actually,
is.
Actually, you need to have your social security number, your filing status, and the exact refund amount are the three things you have to enter on that website. And then it will tell you if they've received your return, if they're processing your return, or the date that they actually issued a refund if it's been issued.
Okay, that's good information. We have just a few minutes left. Sherry, is there anything else you'd like to add in our little wrap-up?
I enjoyed being here. It's always great talking taxes. I know how sad is my life. it's nice to be able to share this information, because a lot of times clients will come in and they have the same questions. They want to know about their refund. They want to know what they're doing wrong, what they're doing right, what they could do better. The biggest piece of advice I give clients is organization is key. If you keep your records organized, it keeps your bill down for tax preparation. It makes your life easier if you need to look something up. But that's probably my biggest piece of advice to clients.
Is get organized.
Yes.
And they can start by using, as we said at the top of the show, ways you can use your tax return,
yes.
your current tax return for next year.
Right.
It's a great way to be organized. I'll tell clients if they have a Schedule C for their business or a Schedule E for rental properties, they should use that as their template for gathering their information for the next year
right.
so that they're not saying, you know, the wrong categories, and then we as the accountants are trying to figure out where do we put this on their tax return. They'll have it all categorized
yeah,
just like the tax return.
Don't bring a shoebox full of receipts into your accountant, especially at this time of year in April. We get a little upset.
Yes, yes. It's very stressful. We're running on vapors
right.
at this point.
Caffeine and sugar.
Sherry, if people would like to reach you, how do they do that?
My email is cfreeh@aol.com, and I'm happy to answer questions. I have a lot of times people will send me emails just with it for a quick question. I might not be able to get back to you immediately right now at this
right.
time of year, but always happy to try to help.
Right.
And also through PICPA, the Ask a CPA section of the website is always a great resource.
Okay, so we've talked about a number of resources this evening. We've talked about the IRS www.pennsylvania.gov. We've talked about the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue's website. We've talked about picpa.org. We've talked about resources of using CPAs for your information as well. So lots of resources out there for folks. We hope you get through the rest of tax season. Next week, I am actually going off topic, off of tax season, which we've been talking about for 2 months now. And we are going to have two attorneys here, Nancy Wallach and Abel Iacobelli, as we discuss a green divorce, conserving your energy and financial resources, including property distribution and child support. So that's going to be interesting to listen to. So many people are affected by divorce these days. If not yourself, maybe your children, maybe your parents, maybe friends or relatives. So there should be lots of good information. I'm looking forward to talking to them about that. I want to thank Sherry for being here so much. I really do appreciate her time. Thank Kathleen Miller for introducing us to Sherry and also promoting the efforts and goodwill of the Pennsylvania Institute of Certified Public Accountants, found on picpa.org. Ray, thanks so much for coming in. Jeff, as always, thank you so much for being here. Love you guys. And thank you so much, listeners. You really made the show worthwhile tonight. Love the calls, love the questions, and keep them coming as always. Remember, coming up next is Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.